And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome in to another episode of One of These Years, our Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, joined by Nick Baumgartner. You can get us on the Athletic app, ad-free, as well as at Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, all the usual spots. Nick, I don't know, man. I don't even know. I tweeted out as soon as that game ended. Like, I don't even know what's left to say at this point. Even when you expect bad things to happen to this franchise, that was like a level beyond. 4th and 19 and then a 66-yard field goal. I don't know. How do you process what happened at the end of that one?
Did it have to hit the crossbar? Like,
and then explodes through the uprights.
I was like, come on. I had the binoculars out and I was just watching Campbell, right? So I didn't actually watch the ball live because I just wanted to see his reaction if they'd won, to see kind of what, you know, on the sideline there. But so I just kind of watched him dip his head and I looked up and I was like, and I think I asked you, I was like, did he make it? He's like, you're like, yeah, he made it. And I like looked at the replay. I'm like, did it have to hit the crossbar too? Like, what the hell? It's funny. We were downstairs and waiting for press conferences to start, and you were in the main room there with waiting for Campbell, and me and a couple others were on the other room waiting for some other people, and Tucker came out of the locker room with the football that he, you know, and it was like taking a phone call, and we're just kind of standing there watching him like, what's going on? Like, what is happening here? And someone's like, just take the ball and pop it. Like, go up to him and ask him, like, why do you hate this city? I don't know, folks. That's a tough one. Yeah, no explanation. That's
I love him
brutal.
Just lurking in the hallway down there.
Yeah,
that's great.
It's like, that, who's he on the phone with right now? Like, Kicking Monthly? I'm like, what is going on?
I remember, I think it was the Falcons game, the 10-second runoff game. You know, the Lions thought they had won, and then they ruled Golden Tate down. That same hallway, because, like, the Lions, the press conference room's up at the top, and then the Lions' locker room
on that ramp,
is down the hallway, and then the visitors' locker room's like kind of tucked in between. And after the Falcons 10-second runoff game, you know, they were like wheeling in the food for the players, and the hot cart caught on fire, just like smoking out everyone in there. So some weird stuff happened.
Some history has happened in that hallway. I tell you what, over the years, my God. So another one for the books. I don't know what to say. I mean, the delay a game thing before, you know, I don't know if anyone's gotten an answer on that.
No, but like, not yet. I mean,
to Campbell's point, though, right? I mean, like he said it after the game. It does not matter what their answer is going to be. They don't know.
Right.
They don't have one. They're just going to fumble around until they can come up with some answer that's like a half-assed apology, and then they move forward. Like, that's... You know, I don't know. John Harbaugh gave some explanation. I guess I haven't read it all, but I was talking to Jeff Rieger standing around the hallway there, that aforementioned hallway, and he'd said that John Harbaugh said something to the effect of, well, that would be impossible, that there would be a delay of game. And I was like, well, John, it happened. I think.
Trying to find it now to see if I can.
I was just like, what? So it was there was a lot going on there in the last minute, but... yeah, a tough one. But also, you know, when we think about challenges for this team and we think about, like, you know, critical spots and, you know, things for them to overcome as a young group, you don't want anyone to have to kind of gut through something like that. But, like, this is a test of your resolve, like anything else would be. And I think that it's a test of your resolve in a way that maybe we didn't expect externally because, Chris, I think that the Lions... are probably better than people might have thought in some areas. And it's, they're not good, but like they're bothering people and they're annoying people and they're in the way. And like, I think that's exactly what you want. This has been a solid start, I think, for Dan Campbell Anthony Lynn and Aaron Glenn. And I think that's my biggest takeaway here today, apart from all the craziness. And I know we can get into all of it, but that's sort of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I mean, they got pretty fortunate in the first half that it was only 10-0. They absolutely did. I mean, it could have been 24-27-0. The Ravens dropped some passes. They made some mistakes they don't usually make. Like, that could have been closer to what the 49ers game was. You know, when you're down 28, it's just kind of over.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the 49ers team, they obviously scrapped back in it late. But that could have been a blowout early. But, again, credit to the Lions for sort of taking advantage of the Ravens letting them hang around. They made some really good offensive adjustments at halftime and came out and started feeding DeAndre Swift and gave the Ravens some trouble there. Got some stops. I mean, I think the defense, it's not there yet, but you're starting to see why they were so high on this defensive line and why they thought that defensive line could be not a dominant unit, but something that just sort of kept you in the game, because they're doing a pretty good job against the run, and they did a really good job boxing in Lamar Jackson. Other than he had the one 30-yard scramble, that was pretty much it. You know, they played pretty well up front. The linebackers looked better, and the DBs for the most part are holding up with, a bunch of guys out there that they weren't expecting to play really this year. So I do think that you take some positives from it. I don't know. I mean, at some point you got to get one of these.
If
you're going to keep scratching and clawing, because this is also, like you said, I think this is a good test, because it was kind of impossible to watch the end of that game and not think back to the game against the Chiefs at Ford Field a couple years ago. Cause it was I think it might've been week 3, I think it or week 4, it was like the same time of the year,
September.
They weren't supposed to be in that game, played really well. We're at it in it at the end, forced them to fourth down, couldn't finish. And then the wheels just totally fell off on that season. They went to Green Bay. They had the, hands to the face game. Those two games, they never the whole Matt Patricia regime never recovered from those two games. And so this is sort of one of those moments you bookmark and say, well, let's see how they look Sunday in Chicago. And let's see how they look 3-4 weeks from now if they don't pick up a win. Because we're going to find out. Like, the vibes have been great. Mm-hmm. Everyone's saying the right things. They're obviously playing hard, but we're going to find out, if this is something that's going to stick for the next 3.5 months,
right,
or if we're going to start seeing a team that, looks like a 2-15 team or something like that.
And it's interesting, that Chiefs game is really, in my mind, the last time I can think where the Lions played reasonably solid defense against, a formidable opponent. I mean, that's really the last time I can remember in my head that we went through a game and looked it back and said, there were mistakes made by the offense, but like you said, Chris, I mean, they hung in there. Like, Romeo Okwara, probably time to just crown him as the Lions' best defensive player. He was outstanding, I thought, in that game. He was all over the place.
Yeah, he was so good.
The job that he did on the edge, and he wasn't alone, of course, but he was the main guy. I mean, he was out there for every snap. I mean, the job he did on the edge to contain Lamar, but not just that. And it wasn't just Romeo, but you saw all those defensive linemen chasing Nick Williams. I saw him doing it a few times, chasing back after you get blocked, getting off the block and then still chasing and finding him. And, it's one of those things, like we were talking in the box, at one point you thought they were doing such a great job on him, and you looked up and Lamar still had 60 yards rushing on 5 carries. And you're like, that's just how it is. And that's how hard this is. So, from an effort standpoint, that was outstanding. I think the communication stuff and everything is still absolutely a work in progress, but you could see why they needed to get more speed in the middle. You can see why a guy like Derek Barnes helps. You can see why a guy like Jalen Reeves-Maybin helps in some of those spots. So, I mean, you couldn't help but be encouraged by the play of the front seven, I think, Chris, in general. I mean, we can talk about the secondary here, and you mentioned the defensive line, but I think I would add the linebackers into that too, because Barnes wasn't perfect. And we can talk more about him, but it was enough and it was what you wanted. And it's your guys are flying to the ball. And I think we haven't seen that in a while. And that's what that looked like to me on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Anzalone played really well. For the most part, again, Campbell pointed it out. There are still some huge breakdowns on those plays between the second and third levels where the linebackers and DBs are just, for whatever reason, this has been going on for years and years with this team.
Right.
just can't cover those guys. Mark Andrews, there were a few that Jackson didn't even throw it to him, and he was just sort of strolling through the secondary with no one in sight. They just couldn't find him. So that's something to clean up. I think we saw Barnes get burned on a couple of those too. But yeah, I mean, you're right. And I think, hey, you mentioned it either Sunday or one of the practice days. I can't remember, but like this is circles back to the question of why Jalen Reeves-Maven never really got a shot with Matt Patricia. We kept wondering, you know, and kept asking Patricia, and it was sort of always this. It wasn't even really a secret that he was maybe their most athletic linebacker. He was their best coverage guy, and they kept getting smoked in the previous defense in those areas. And just because Reeves-Maven weighs 225 and not 260, they wouldn't play him. But
right, yeah,
there's clearly something there that works against modern NFL offenses. So I think that was a good move to get him some time. And yeah, the front, this was also something you brought up, I think, pertaining to Nick Williams, that it did seem to be part of the game plan that when they, sorry, I'm losing my voice for some reason this week, when they weren't getting home, they weren't just aimlessly doing stuff. Right. Nick Williams kept, you know, dropping and filling a lane so Jackson couldn't escape. They used Julian Okoro was only out there for 10 snaps, and I think he rushed the passer like 6 or 7 times. But on one or two of the other ones, he was dropping into kind of zone coverage. And once Jackson, I think his first read was right behind Julian, looked right at him, kind of freaked out for a second, and then just took off and got like 2 yards. So there was a good plan to keep Jackson in check, and I think they executed it pretty well up front. You're also getting, like, Michael Brockers played pretty well, I think. And Charles Harris played pretty well. So you're getting some effort for these guys,
I think you got, and we mentioned that too in our post game, that, you know, Trey Flowers didn't play in this game, and I mean, you couldn't have known. I mean, it was news to me afterward. I mean, you barely felt it. And I mean, Charles Harris plays 45 snaps and plays pretty darn well, right? Like I remember when training camp started and we were looking at like, who are you going to keep? Who are they going to keep here? And we kept talking about Charles Harris. And it's like, I think they're probably going to really try hard to keep a guy like Harris because of a couple different things he can do for you from a pass rush standpoint, speed on the edge, and just disruption. And they're getting more disruption. I think that's something that clearly we never saw from the Patricia defenses, where it was, you know, so much more about play a technique, play a gap, just hold and let the linebackers clean everything up. I mean, like, we talked to Aaron Glenn in the offseason, and he was very clear about, you know, I want guys up front to create disruption. I want them to close gaps. I want them to seal things off so that our linebackers don't have to worry about it, so we can play with 230-pound guys that can run and can cover space sideline to sideline. And all three guys that, you know, we're filling in the inside – and Reeves-Maven, Anzalone, and Derek Barnes, all of them can run. All of them are plus athletes. They're all modern linebackers. And for the first time in a long time, the Lions walked out there and played defense with 11 players that were modern NFL football players. And I think that's like a start, right? Like, we talk about little things, I'll take it. And I know we wanted to start the show talking about the way that this staff has gotten through this season. And I mean, it's interesting. I think I saw that Jeff Schwartz, who's a great follow on Twitter, tweeted after week one or week two that the Lions are the example of a good, bad team. Mm-hmm. They are a positive attitude, hardworking, young, well-coached, bad football team that is going to give teams that are sloughing off or lost or broken later in the year, if this effort keeps up, the Lions are going to steal games. And I don't know how many, maybe more than you want them to.
They might steal one this weekend. They might get one on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, they could still go 1-16, right? But like, I don't know, but there's something here with the work and everything else that's sticking. And I think the staff, I mean, the coordinators, Chris, I mean, they have to get a lot of credit here.
Yeah, I mean, I said to you, like, they could maybe this lasts for a while. Maybe they start 0-8, but I also look at the schedule. Like, they've got Chicago's a disaster. Minnesota beat Seattle, but I don't know that's that good of a team. You know, they got Cincinnati. Philadelphia's a mess. Pittsburgh's a mess. Like, they definitely could pick up 2 or 3 or 4 here in the next, you know, 7 weeks and kind of be pretty interesting with it. They also could lose all of them. Right. I mean, they're sort of in that, you know, we've talked about the rebuild, like the citywide rebuild. And I think a lot of people have compared what's happened with the Lions to what the Pistons went through. And you definitely see that, like, GM comes in. It's like, I don't want any of these guys that were here
Guts
before.
It. Yeah, right.
Let's get rid of all of them. Let's get the draft picks. Let's, you know, let the coaches coach. We're just going to be a pain in everyone's ass for a year, and then we'll worry about competing. And I think, like you said, I think you're right. I think that that is what's going on right now. You know, again, you want to, you need to get one at some point just to make everyone feel better. And I guess that kind of transitions us in. We're talking about the coordinators here. I did want to talk about Aaron Glenn's scheme and then a little bit about the 4th-and-19 play. But on the scheme, it was, I think when it was an obvious passing down, a lot of it looked familiar. The Lions were kind of playing, you know, a little bit of that shell, making sure nothing was get over the top.
Yep.
Early downs, they did a lot more of what they said they were going to have to do, which is, you know, walk a safety up and make sure they were covering all those run fits. It was usually Harris when he was on the field or Dean Marlowe when he was on the field. And then when they were out there together, it was either or. But I thought that was effective, and I thought they did a pretty good job, again, of – They didn't get gashed by any means in the run game. I think they put Baltimore into a lot of uncomfortable, you know, second and third down spots. And so this was a game where I thought Aaron Glenn's scheme worked pretty well. And I get the sense that he's starting to feel it a little bit with what he has and what works with this group.
And I would also add, this is the best the Lions secondary has tackled. Maybe since I've been covering the team.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Fair, and I think that I assume that Aaron Glenn and Aubrey Pleasant really challenged those guys. Because like you said, Chris, at the beginning of the game, and not at the beginning of the game, the whole game, when the Ravens are coming out in those pistol looks or when they're loaded up, and you know, and the Ravens are, they're one of those teams where you don't have to guess a lot. You know, a lot of times they make it easier for you defensively, because I don't think you have to guess. When they're going to run the ball, you know they're going to run the ball. It's just a matter of what they're going to do, right? So when you bring the safety down, and Campbell talked about early last week, you know, you got to be gapped up. You got to make sure every gap's taken care of. And when you are in your gap, you have to tackle. Or you're going to give up 500 rushing yards in this game. So, like, that was the situation. And you go down the list and, you know, Will Harris is still struggling in some areas. But we can't keep going here as much as we've dogged on him without noting that his tackling's been much better. It's not perfect, but it was better in this game. His run defense was very good in this game. Tracy Walker's having a very good start to the season. I think Orarie tackled better in this game. And then Dean Marlowe is bringing, I think we expected that from him. So that was very noticeable to me, that you had the effort and you got the tackling. And then, yeah, it all fit together, because every time they had to be in a passing situation, and the Lions were able to force them into more of those, we noticed that too. You know, you're better on first down. That's going to lead to a longer, you know, to go on third down. So every time they're in a passing situation, you know, Glenn made sure, you know, that Lamar's looking into that shell, which is not ideal, not what you want. And, you know, you lost a tight end a few times, but for the most part, I think they made it, they didn't give him anything easy, you know, like they got burned some, but for the most part, I think the Ravens had to earn everything they got. And that's kind of what you want to do.
Well, that's coaching too, not just the, you know, fundamentals of tackling, but I think like Will Harris's usage in this defense, you know, there were times in that Patricia defense where he was playing single high. He was carrying tight ends 30 yards downfield on go routes. Like, this is stuff he can't be doing. But you put him in the box and let's just say, be an extra linebacker for us and go tackle, and he's still pretty useful. And they like him, and that's sort of when they were hyping him up in training camp, that's a lot of what he was doing well, was reading those run plays and filling a gap and helping out there. So I think that all, again, that to me goes back to the coaching and just sort of knowing what your personnel is and how to use it. And it's not perfect. You know, some of that stuff you're mentioning, like Derek Barnes, you know, I think some of the coverage busts or whatever you want to call them, the Lions will fix those. That was something Campbell said they were going to stress all week, so that should get better. Some of the stuff against the run is, you know, what we mentioned when we went back and watched this film from Purdue. Like, occasionally,
yes,
you know, he'll let guys get into him and just sort of walk him back like 5, 6, 7, 8 yards, and we saw that a couple times.
Right.
on Sunday. So that's going to have to be better. Like, he's got to be better and be more physical if he's going to be playing in there, because that lack of physicality is one of the reasons why Jamie Collins wasn't working out. So they're going to need to see some improvement there. But first start, I thought he was fine. And I really think that just the, again, the overall game plan there made a lot of sense. Like, if you're going to lose to the Ravens, at least make them try to throw the football. And they'll probably beat you a lot of the time because they're still really good at throwing the football. But
yeah,
I think that's how you want to go down. You don't want to give up 6 yards a carry. You're gonna get killed.
We said it last week. And it holds up against every opponent you're playing. And it's just different for every opponent. But it was the same thing with Rodgers. You make them take the long way. Make them do it the hard way. Make them go the full 12 plays. Because, you know, through the course of 12 plays, I mean, what if somebody jumps off sides, right? What if somebody holds and ruins it? I mean, make them go the long way so that the odds of them screwing something up are greater. And frankly, that's what happened in this game. Like, that's what happened in this game. Right. Aaron Glenn didn't flinch. He said, we're going to make you go the long way, and we're going to make you play every call, and we're going to make you finish every single play. You're not just going to get it. And I don't think the Ravens are the best team, the best Ravens team John Harbaugh's ever had. And the Ravens teams usually are better in November and December, right, than they are in September. I think he would even tell you that. But there's talent on that team. They're going to be a playoff contender, I would assume, on some level, to some degree. And the Lions went into a game with Bobby Price playing corner, A.J. Parker playing slot corner, rookies all over the place. And the plan from both coordinators and the head coach was perfect. Again, all 3 weeks, I've had no issue with their plan. Everything these three guys have done from an organizational standpoint, from, the calls they're making on the field. Obviously, everything isn't perfect, right? Every decision isn't perfect. I shouldn't say that. But the basic structure of how they're approaching every game, from monitoring the clock, making sure they're in the right spots and all this, and it's a lot. I got to tell you, I don't have a lot to really complain about here or nitpick at, because this is a very difficult job. And we talked about that 4th-and-19, Chris. Like, the Lions took a timeout right before that. Lamar Jackson talked about, you know, that helped him a ton because he's exhausted. The line's exhausted, you know, like that gives him another shot to go in there and make a play. Maybe you don't want to take a timeout there. Maybe that's a mistake. Maybe you overthought yourself. But at the same time, I find it difficult to really nitpick on these guys because every single second in every game has to be measured. They're at such a talent imbalance that they're measuring every play, and they mismeasured this game by like 10 seconds. That's how I felt at the end. And, you know, it was a tough one, I think, for the staff as much as anybody else, because I think they earned that win as much as anyone else on the team or in the building.
Yeah. And we talked even about the kickoff, you know, that they're kicking it off to a really dangerous return
tough guy.
Someone who's had some big returns all year, but you boom it through the end zone there and you save 7 or 8 seconds there. Yeah, and then you end up losing at the end by 7 or 8 seconds. So, it does get, there's a pretty fine line at the end of things. The 4th-and-19, I did want to unpack a little bit. I don't want to harp on it too much because I think there were a lot of other things that were more important than that one particular play. But like you said, they call the timeout. Lamar said afterwards, like, we were tired. We were kind of scrambling around. They didn't have a timeout to stop the clock and get their call figured out. They changed the play call after they called the timeout. The crowd was just losing its mind before the fourth. And I mean, they still were after the timeout, but time. I think it was probably
it was a little louder before.
And I think, to your point, a lot of that happened because they just wanted to try to get into the right spot. And we heard from someone, you and I talked to someone who was down on the sideline. It was like there were guys out there who didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. Yeah. Like, they were having their own trouble getting the play calling, getting it communicated. Like I said, it was very loud. Guys were all over the field because they were, you know, they were playing 30 yards deep and they were sideline to sideline. They weren't in a huddle at that point, really. So Alex Anzalone's trying to communicate a play call to
a bunch
of guys he's barely played with, while the crowd's at 120 decibels and the whole defense is spread out. So I get it. I think the thing that kills the coaching staff, and you talk about being frustrated by letting it get away, is that They call timeout to try to settle it, to get the call that they want.
Right.
And then, as Campbell said, 10 of 11 guys then went out and executed the call they wanted.
Exactly.
One guy didn't. He didn't specify which one, so we can talk about that a little bit. Uh-huh. But one guy didn't, and that's where the throw went, and you give up 30 yards and you lose the game.
Yeah.
So what do you do? I mean, what do you do?
Really? So your instinct there clearly is to just let them play. And right, in a normal situation, like if you've got veterans out there, let's say you even got like a moderately young defense with like, you've got a veteran safety, a veteran corner, a veteran linebacker, and you've got enough guys to get people organized and just go play, right? Like even if you don't get the call perfect, everybody kind of knows what they're doing. So we know the situation here. It's 4th and 19. They got to go a long way. Just go play. The crowd's loud. They're exhausted. Odds are they're going to screw this up more than we are. That's not what the Lions are. That's not the life the Lions are living here. And I think that that's sort of the thing that you're in, is that they don't have the luxury of saying, just go play, because we'll know how to kind of get through this. Because they don't have, they can't say that. They can't, because clearly, like Campbell says, we called timeout to reset ourselves because we weren't going to get it in. And 10 of 11 guys went out and ran the call right. If they hadn't done that, their fear was that 6 of 11 guys were going to go out there and run the call right. And it was going to be a touchdown. And you go for a touchdown
or something. Yeah, like exactly.
On 4th and 19. So that is what they're dealing with on a play-to-play basis every play throughout the entire football game. Like that's I think, when Chris and I talk about how they're measuring and kind of like managing the game as a staff, that is what we're talking about. Like the play earlier in the half when the crowd booed on the 4th and 6, when I think it was 4th and 1, somebody jumps off sides.
Yep.
The ball, remember this? The ball's on the other side of the 50. They're in Lions territory, or in the opponent territory. And Campbell sent the offense back out there on a 4th and 6 and looked like they're going to try to draw them off sides or whatever. And I'm like, no, I think they're just going to kill the clock, go delay a game and punt, because, you know, obviously it gives Fox more room, but also like they need the time. They need to kill the clock. Like this is for later in the game. And every single thing they do all game long has to matter, and it's obviously exhausting, but that's the job. And that's the thing. They're in a lot of these, like, what do you do? They get put in these spots in these tight games where, yeah, at some point you're going to, but that's the other part of it. Like we said earlier, Chris, like at some point you're going to need to get yourself in a situation where you can go play a call there and hope that 10 of 11 figure it out and you're okay. And, you know, they're not there yet. And I understand it, but it's a tough, you know, it's a tough deal in the moment. And what do you do? I don't know. That's a good question.
I was with you. I would have liked to see them play it out, because I think your default there, even with young guys, I think the default there is just get deep. And
just get deep.
Like if your play call there is, if it only gets to Anzalone and the linebackers and the defensive line, and your instruction to the defensive backs, if you're just standing on the sidelines waving your arms back towards the end zone and telling them to play deep, I still think that that's fine in that moment, because I don't, you know, like that's the only thing you cannot give up there is a bomb over the top. Mm-hmm. I think the default from the defensive backs, like you still had Walker and Harris and Oral Warrior out there. It wasn't all guys who were playing like for the first time ever. Like I think that they would have had enough sense to play that the way you needed to. And then on top of it, the Ravens were just kind of all over the place. They had no idea what they were doing in that moment.
Right.
And it would have been very hard for them to convert a 4th and 19 there. And also, I think the if you give up 20 instead of 35, you still win the game. And so that was my other like minor point of contention there is, as I said, we never got an exact answer for who the one, the lone wolf was on that play, you know. And so to sort of set it up, the Ravens had two receivers. I think it was Duvernay and Brown to the left. They had Sammy Watkins to the right. There was a fourth receiver that motioned, I think he motioned across the backfield. I can't remember which guy that was, but two of the receivers ran really deep. One, like I think it was Duvernay, ran like a 45-yard, 50-yard deep post that the Lions covered with a couple guys. Mm-hmm. Bobby Price was on Watkins the snap. Mm-hmm. And then Sammy Watkins ran that deep over that we saw him get open on at the end. Will Harris and Tracy Walker were defending the first down line. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go back and watch that play, Tracy Walker standing right in the middle of the field, exactly on the line. Yeah. And so my inclination is that that's where both those safeties were supposed to be. And Harris was responsible for picking up anyone who came across the middle like that. But I don't know for sure that it was Will Harris that screwed up. And I also would, if we're going to nitpick here, I guess I would kind of question needing to defend the first down line in the middle of the field there, because you don't want them to convert.
Yeah.
But if they convert right to the first down line in the middle of the field, you still win that game.
Right.
So I don't know. Again, I don't want to nitpick too much. I think Aaron Glenn called a great game.
Yeah.
But something went wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I think exactly what they were worried about happened. I mean, because I think you called timeout there too to also remind your guys, like, this kicker over here is not just a dude. He's not the guy we've got. Okay. He can kick the ball like 70 goddamn yards if we give him a chance. So yes, you can't get beat deep, but also, like, we've got to be a little bit more wary of, like, you can't give up 35 or 40 here either. Right. Like, because range is not really a thing with this guy. So, but all the things that they were worried about happening if they didn't call a timeout, it happened anyway. And it's like a bust is a bust, no matter how you look at it and whose fault, you know, if it's Bobby Price or somebody else getting too deep or whatever, doesn't matter. A bust is a bust. And like Campbell said, you know, they've got to go a long way on 4th and 19 and something goes wrong there. And that's, but that's also, like, I would say this, you know, Aaron Glenn, I think, has been very good through 3 games, but he's also had something in every game that we've talked about. And it was the same last week with the Packers, where the minute he brought that safety down on 3rd and 12, Aaron Rodgers found it and burned him. Like, I think that, you know, and Aaron Glenn said this 3 or 4 weeks ago, that he was really eager to go into this beginning stretch of football here this season because it was going to be Kyle Shanahan, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar, and the Ravens. So his defense and him as a play caller was going to get tested by, you know, stretch and cut, Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, all the stuff that Lamar and the Ravens do. So he was eager to test where he was at as a play caller for the first time ever against 3 of the most challenging and unique attacks. And I think, by and large, he does pretty well. But also, like, I think he probably learned lessons in there, too, about the game that a defensive coordinator is playing against the other quarterback and offensive coordinator every time out. So I'm super curious to see how, like, Aaron Glenn plays the Packers the second time. And I'm curious to see, you know, how some of these calls come up as we go forward in some of these big spots, because I think we've seen he's called very, you know, he's been very good, you know, I think in a lot of areas. You can't really argue that. But also there's been something every week that he would probably say, I'd like that back. And it's been curious to see kind of that evolve too. And it's been, that's been something to watch. And I think something to sort of monitor as we go forward too.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Okay, so we talked about Glenn. Let's talk about Anthony Lynn, because there's been a lot of really good stuff there too. And we've also had, you know, the second half against the Packers, the offense kind of vanished. The first half against the Ravens, the offense kind of vanished. So what do you like and what don't you like on offense and with the play calling and the game plan so far?
So when the offense has been bad, it's been turnovers and by the quarterback, and Goff not making good throws or struggling with pressure. And, you know, it's important to note too, and we talked about this before we started recording, like Jared Goff is dealing with the same limitations that Anthony Lynn is dealing with, right? So the receivers are not good. I'll just say that for what it is. The receivers are not good. They're still without Tyrell Williams, who is the only deep threat that you have left here. And, you know, everybody likes how hard Khalif Raymond plays, and I think Khalif Raymond's a nice player and a guy who's earned his spot on this team, but, like, he's not an outside receiver threat, and he's trying to run deep routes, and that's not going to work. So he's dealing with all the same things that Anthony Lynn's dealing with, but he's also dealing with, you know, Goff, that is. He's dealing with confidence, you know, issues. It comes and goes. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not, and I think we're still seeing that sort of comes and goes. So it's Lynn's job to read that and make sure that Goff's in good spots, and make sure that the offense, like we said earlier, with same thing with Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn, you've got to measure every single call that you're making. And I think that all the adjustments he's made have been what they need to be when it's been time to get the ball to get the ball down to the backs and let them work. That's what they've done. They've found ways to keep themselves in striking distance in games to make sure that they have the run as like a viable option. I think that's what I've been landing on. The longer the Lions can get into a game where the run is still something that Lynn can go to, they are hard to defend because his screen stuff is really good. His outside zone stuff is really good. And he knows, and I think the whole staff knows, that Swift, if you can get him consistent, like there's a little Kamara to him. Like you can do a lot with DeAndre Swift to get yourself down the field. And he can bail you out in some spots, and I think Lynn knows that. And the way that they used him in the second half, I thought was outstanding. The way that they got Goff in good situations. I mean, he was like, I think he had one incompletion in the second half, right? So he's feeling good. I mean, it was great. I thought, we said at the end, give him a game ball, no matter how this ends. Because all things considered, I thought the main reason why they were still in it at the end was how Lynn called the second half. And I thought it was a terrific performance by him and another really good start by a coordinator here.
Yeah, well, and I think you can see again that, you know, we talk about the receivers a lot, and it certainly would help to have one guy like Tyrell Williams.
Yeah, right.
Tyrell Williams isn't, you know, a top tier wide receiver necessarily in this league, but on this offense, losing him was a huge setback because he could get vertical. He also was their most consistent guy running deep over the middle of the field. Like he was Goff's favorite target at receiver. So you take him out of the lineup, and that's a big hit. Now you got a bunch of guys you don't really know all that much about. Mm-hmm. Goff only threw two balls over 20 yards in that game. One was Cephas drew a pass interference. And the other one, if you have Tyrell Williams running that route instead of Khalif Raymond, it's probably a touchdown.
Yep.
Because Khalif Raymond got bumped a little bit, but didn't finish that play, couldn't get back to the ball. But you had one-on-one with a cornerback who never found the football and no safety help. Like, you had exactly what you wanted on that play, and Goff made a good throw.
Yeah, perfect.
Raymond just got bumped off his route a tiny bit, and that was it. So if you have someone else running that, even like Trinity Benson maybe or someone makes that play. So we can come back to the receivers in a minute because I'm working on something for this week about, you know, it's been interesting. People keep bringing up in the comments, well, you know, how do you even evaluate Goff with the receivers? And I think it's an interesting question. So I do want to come back to it. But Swift, You're right, man. When he's going like that, and you know, they said, well, we just wanted to feed the hot hand, whatever, but
well,
there's that's gotta be that's it. Like this offense can like you can run an offense primarily through a back like that and a tight end like Hockenson and figure out the rest. And I think we saw that. That's what happened in the second half. Like they just could not. If you get Swift into the open field, even against two defenders, he's going to get you some yards because he's that good. So that was a, the halftime adjustments to get him more involved were great.
I mean, I said it during the game and I'll say it again. Probably wrote it afterward. I don't care how they get there, but Swift needs 20 to 25 touches every single game the rest of the way.
Yep.
And I would say that, you know, Jamal Williams is probably in that 15 range, somewhere in there, 15 to 20, if you want to, you know, and that can be even split, 10 and 10, carry and catch. I don't care. I don't care how you get there, but like Swift needs to touch the ball in the 20s, I think, every game. And I think that the Lions know that. I think that my read on this has been that the Lions know how talented DeAndre Swift is. They want DeAndre Swift to be more consistent and really become a star because I think that they, I think he can. I think he can. I think that everybody sees what he does with the ball in open space and knows like some of those cuts he made. There was one he made with two guys coming on him that I was like, he looked like he just disappeared and reappeared 3 yards ahead. You know, like what the hell was that? Did you just like vanish underneath the field? Like, he is very good in short, tight, like the short area quickness is outstanding. He's hard to tackle in space. Like, and we talked about this in the winter, like Anthony Lynn's stuff that they did with the Bills, that they did with San Diego or the Chargers, I should say. Swift is perfect for it. Like he's perfect for all of it. Like he can do all of it. If you can get another compliment back here with, you know, which is what they have with Williams, those guys and Hockenson, you get one more deep threat over the top and you get Goff kind of in spots that you want him to be in and you suddenly have an offense that's capable of really bothering people. And I think that those are things that if you're trying to get excited about something, that's what it is. I mean, Swift has what it takes. I think we've seen that. But it does have to be more consistent, and I think the Lions are continuing to challenge him and not just crown him as a superstar, because I think they're certainly cautious about that too, because I think DeAndre needs to be pushed probably too a little bit in this case and shown that, man, you can be really, really good, but we need to see it, you know, every single time you're out there. And, you know, so far so good. I would like to see more of that, if nothing else going forward here. I think you would probably agree, but I guess I'd ask you the same thing.
For sure. Yeah. And Lomas Brown, you know, the Lions legendary tackle, color commentator on radio, has told me before that some of the Swift runs remind him of Barry.
Right.
Just the way he, you know, it's designed to go to the left, and he says, we're not doing that. And he just goes back the other way, and he gets 5 yards. And they're different players in a lot of ways, obviously, and I certainly would not put DeAndre Swift in Barry Sanders category. But I get, you know, some of the vision stuff. I think the best thing, the thing that I like the most about Swift, you mentioned the cuts, is there are a lot of backs who need to bring it to a halt and cut and then get going again. He does it at full speed.
Yeah,
he can be like that
speed.
Screen pass he scored on against the 49ers, the cut he made on the safety. I mean, he didn't slow down at all.
No.
He was at full speed through the entire cut. And so I think he is really special in that way. I mean, you do the thing with going up to 20, 25 carries is I think there is reason to be concerned if he can hold up over 17 games doing that. And I think we saw some of that concern even in the preseason and training camp with how they kind of eased him into things. But yeah, I mean, the offense is totally different with the ball in his hands, and defenses have to account for him. I mean, I think that that's some of the best stuff we've seen from Anthony Lynn. We saw more of the two back look.
Yes, we did.
In this game, I think some of the best stuff we've seen from them has been some of the best stuff we've seen have been, even if Swift or Hockenson isn't getting the ball, putting them in motion or making it look like the play is going to them is causing all sorts of problems for the defense, because they have to overreact to those guys, and then you can open up some other things.
They've got some cool stuff. They did the slice pass to Swift. That's not fair. Out of the 21, I mean, they do have some things they can do that creates unique challenges, especially with the offensive line the way it is. And it was good to see Anthony Lynn continue to add more to it. And I think there'll be more. You know, we even saw a little bit of it didn't work, but they got Sewell out there on the bubble. They tried the bubble screen where, you know, Sewell's pulling out. We saw Sewell do some of that in college.
I thought you were going to talk about the double pass.
Well, I was going to say, I probably wouldn't let Swift throw it again. But like, other than that, it was good to see them go to some more of that stuff with the two backs out there together. Some of the motion, we saw the jet, little pop pass to Swift. You can do that. All things that you need to do to keep on film, you know, for other teams to pay attention to. And, you know, you look at the box score at the end. Swift has 14 carries and 7 targets. Like, for me, that's about what you want. I think and Jamal Williams is at 12 carries and 2 targets. I mean, you know, that I think that something in there is what you're looking for. You need to find ways to get Swift action as much as possible, and Goff needs to be comfortable kind of maybe even looking for him earlier, I would say, in some routes, which shouldn't be a problem, right? I think with his penchant to check down, that's something that should be comfortable for Goff, and Swift can take advantage of it. So I think that take advantage of it. Find the most, you know, efficiency you can out of that. And I think that's right now, that's the best thing they have, and clearly that's what they need to, you know, kind of lean on going forward.
Yeah, they only averaged 3.4 yards per carry, but this was one of those games you always hear coaches and announcers talk about using the pass game as an extension of the run
right.
game. Swift averaged 8.5 yards per catch. Williams averaged 12.5 yards on his 2 catches. Raymond, who they used in the screen game, averaged over 11.
Right.
So these are things you can do.
Yeah, those are basically runs. I mean, to me, they were more or less all effect. You know, for all intents and purposes, this felt like a game where you were averaging 5 yards carry. And it wasn't. But, like, that's a great point because that's what it felt like. And I think that's how the game flowed.
Yeah, and that's why I brought it up. Like, 3.4 mm-hmm. yards, I saw that and I sort of did a double take because it just felt – it really did. It felt like they were super effective with the run game. And mm-hmm. on straight runs, they were okay. But using the backs everywhere, they did really well. You mentioned the line. I did want to talk about that a little bit because even Campbell said, you know, that was not Sewell's best game. I think it was probably – I think we can pretty clearly say it was his worst pass blocking game of the three so far. The right side, I did think, played pretty well. As I mentioned in our observations, like, I thought Matt Nelson probably played his best game.
Yeah,
I think Vitae's been playing pretty well. But the Ravens, especially in that first half, the Lions just could not figure out those blitzes they were getting from the Ravens. And so I wonder how much of that's the line, how much of that is Lynn, how much of that is Goff on not seeing those blitzes before they happen. Like, where do you place the blame for problems like that?
Some of it's the Ravens because they blitz on every play.
Sure.
But some of it is, but like, that's something that they knew, right? So like, I put a lot of that on Goff and the offensive line, but I put a lot of that on Goff as well, because that's a game where you go into that game and you know that the Ravens play more cover zero than anybody in the league, and their whole thing is just trying to find ways to mess with your gaps, mess with your line up front, give you different looks, load to this side, load to that side, 7 guys up front, nobody back, like, and they're sending pressures from all over the damn place. So you have to know that you're going to, you know, if you're a quarterback, your head's on a swivel, and I would say that you're going to get hit. Like, you're going to get hit. And there were some throws in the first half that I was disappointed to see Goff sort of shy away from, you know, like, step, you know, that's the thing you talk about, you know, in Little League with a batter. You don't want him to have his foot fall out of the bucket. It's the same thing with a quarterback. You want the front foot to land straight, step into the throw. You're going to get hit, but that's the job. You're getting paid 20-something million dollars a year.
I looked over at you after a couple of those throws in the first half, and it was like Peyton.
Come on
those
man.
Monday Nighters after a pick 6. Like just what in the world?
These are throws that he's capable of making. Like, we've seen him do it. Put your foot down, step into the ball, and throw it. That's what I was disappointed with. And I think Goff, because I think Goff's better than that. And I think that that's the stuff that I think that he needs to get out of his head and get away from it. I'd like to see him get it out of his head because I do think he's better. And we've talked about this all year. Goff is a better football player than a lot of the stuff that we see on the field because so much of the things that hold him back are mental. And to me, that's another example. Got to be faster in your head and you've got to be more willing and knowing that you're just going to take a hit. Stand in there and throw it. Because there was a couple, I mean, there was a first down that they should have had earlier in the game to, I want to say it was Raymond or Fells or somebody on the outside that was like, he was open. The ball was like 4 yards short because Goff's like ducking away in the face of pressure that hadn't even hit him yet. And it's like, the line wasn't great either, but I need more from the quarterback in the pocket too. He needs to be more comfortable in there. It's just not there yet.
The receivers, like I said, I think it is a fair question to ask. Can we evaluate Jared Goff right now with the receivers the way that they are? Because, right, as I mentioned, I think losing Tyrell Williams was a big hit. They were counting on Breshad Perriman to be part of this offense, and he never did anything. Like, right, that was over from the moment he got here. St. Brown hasn't quite
clicked
the way we thought maybe it would. I think some of that's maybe, you know, just the usage of the play calling. Right, but
I agree.
He hasn't had that breakthrough performance. So, you know, you're down to what Khalif Raymond had, 10 targets. No one else, no other wide receiver had more than one.
Oh, God.
Hodge, Cephas, St. Brown, Benson all had one apiece. That was it for the whole receiving corps.
So and real quick, if you polled the listeners of the show, would any of them know who Hodge's first name is? Continue. Go ahead. Jesus.
And yeah, I mean, and those plays went for 19 yards. So you had four attempts to the receivers not named Khalif Raymond for 19 yards.
Right.
So is it fair to evaluate Jared Goff with this receiving corps? I don't want to spoil what I'm doing for later in this week. I'm probably going to end up hedging a little bit because I think it's fair to evaluate some of the stuff you're talking about. It's fair to evaluate, you know, the blitz recognition pre-snap and the ability to stand in the pocket and make a throw. It's certainly fair to ask why he's not throwing the ball downfield more. And that's something that I will point out in the story that there are some plays here where, like you said, the Ravens had 8 or 9 up near the line of scrimmage almost the entire game. Sometimes you just got to throw it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to give your guys a chance downfield to go make a play. And he's had some opportunities that he has chosen not to take.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know that you can fully evaluate Jared Goff because this is, it's not, guys aren't running wide open all over the place. And he's just not seeing them. He is missing some of those throws. He's making some bad throws. But I don't know. Where do you fall? Like, what do we take away from Goff's first 3 weeks?
I think you just have to be super objective with it. I think the Lions can evaluate him. For fans, I think it's going to be harder. And you really have to, you know, pay probably more nuanced attention. Because the thing of it is, and we've said this a few times, he's going to look worse than he probably is in certain spots because he doesn't have anybody that's got, except for Swift and Hockenson, he doesn't have anybody that can make him look good. He doesn't have anybody that he can just like give the ball to and be like, oh, that was a 70-yard pass that went 3 yards in the air, right? Like, he doesn't really have anybody that can do that for him. He doesn't have anybody that can bail him out. And he really didn't have anybody in with the Rams necessarily that could do that, except he had a coach who could kind of do that for him, right? So I think the difference is all of his mistakes are, and it's the same for everybody on the team, but like all of his mistakes are being pronounced that much more because the Lions just have no margin for error. So I think he's going to look worse than he does to the naked eye a lot of times. Like, there's going to be times where you think he's playing bad that he's actually probably playing okay, right? Like, I think that's going to happen this season. And it's happened already. We've seen a few stretches this year where people have been like, what the hell's Goff doing? I'm like, well, he's probably being okay. And I think, to be fair on my criticisms, people on me, like, I probably need to be better with that. Because there are times where it's like, yeah, no, that's not, there's nothing he could do there. Like, what do you want him to do? Like, some of those times, it's like, it is what it is. But I do think you can fairly judge him on the areas where he needs to improve. Because you know what Jared Goff is at this point. He's not a rookie. He's not a first-year player. You know the areas of growth that he needs to get better at, and it's the things we've just talked about. It's, you know, being better in the face of pressure, having a plan in the pocket. Like, how many more times are we gonna have to watch him roll out the wrong way and get sacked on a 15-yard sack move, where it's man. Like, gotta, Goff, just throw it away, you know? Like, have a better plan, right? Like, take – and he did to the point earlier about, you know, taking chances sometimes on the field. He's getting better at that. It's not like overwhelming, but he is getting better. Took a chance to Raymond, and, you know, like we talked about earlier, he gets bumped off his route. It doesn't work. Took a chance to Cephas later, and you get a flag. Like, some things are – It's getting better one percentage point at a time, but it is getting better. And I think that rate obviously has to go up. I do think the Lions have enough to fairly judge Jared Goff because they know all the nuance and they know the things to look at. But from a fan standpoint about making the determination of, like, are they losing the game just because of Jared Goff? No. Like, you know, if he in a game like this, absolutely not. He didn't turn it over. And I think that at the end of the day, if Goff's not turning it over, you know what? Like, all the things you're asking him to do, he's a 70% passer in this game. He didn't turn it over. He didn't make big plays for you, but he didn't screw you either. And I think that's right now, you know, one of those things that you're just going to have to live with. So it's a hard conversation, but it's an interesting one. And I'm curious on your thoughts on the whole thing too here.
Well, I think the question more isn't, you know, is he losing games right now? It's, is he going, can he be the quarterback in 2 years when this is better in theory? And I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I think you make a really good point that, and I am with you in that I'm guilty of it too. We've been telling people since they got Goff, everyone needs to kind of reset their expectations.
Yeah.
And I think we probably need to remind ourselves of that sometimes, because there are some plays out there where you look back at him and he's got some opportunities deep, and it's maybe, you know, the pocket's breaking down a little. It's probably his third or fourth read is that deep ball. And, you know, in your mind, you look at it and say, well, I mean, throw it to the deep guy. And I don't know that that's how this offense is supposed to operate. And I don't know that that's how Jared Goff is ever going to operate. Like, if it was Stafford back there, a couple of these looks, you know, I've got one for this story I'm working on, one like screen grab from the Packers game. Mm-hmm. They had three receivers and Hockenson, and then they released Swift out of the backfield, and Swift was kind of wide open. Hockenson ran about 15 yards, turned around. Four Packers boxed him. He had four Packers coverage guys around him. So what you ended up with was an underneath route to St. Brown, or to, Swift. Who it was. I think it was St. Brown. So you had Swift went out in the flat. St. Brown, I think he threw the ball to St. Brown for like 4 yards.
Right.
But you had four defenders around Hockenson. So what you wound up with was you had Raymond running a deep post with just a safety on his back hip, and you had St. Brown running a wheel route, or Trinity Benson running a wheel route up the sideline one-on-one against a corner. And if it was Stafford, that ball's probably going to Khalif Raymond or to Trinity Benson 40 yards downfield against in one-on-one and say, just go make a play for us.
Right, yeah.
I don't know that they feel the way, like, you don't have Marvin Jones anymore. So maybe you don't take those shots with Trinity Benson and with Kadero Hodge. You know, maybe this is just what the offense is. And I'm sure some of the message from Dan Campbell is for Jared Goff to do what he's been doing. Don't throw it downfield if a guy's not wide. We don't want a shot up the sideline, you know, one-on-one that's well covered necessarily. If you get six, get six.
Yes.
And so I think that to me, that is maybe more the challenge in evaluating Goff than the receiver position, is just what are the demands on him in this offense? Because I don't think they're asking him to get out there and just rip it.
No, I think this is what they want him to be. Yeah. There's a risk quotient here, right? Like, especially for this team right now, but it could be this way always. I don't know that. But like for right now, it absolutely is, because we just said it earlier, the Lions have a shot. They'll have a shot to win almost every game they're in, or maybe every game they're in, if they can get to the fourth quarter with Anthony Lynn still having the run as a viable option. And the only way that's going to happen is if Goff takes care of the ball and doesn't put them in situations where, hey, you guys wanted me to take a shot there, and I did, and we turned it over. So it's like, now we can't, you know, now we're behind, and this is not good. So, like, those are things as they go forward. It's you're working on his confidence. You're working on all these things with him fitting inside this offense that we really don't even know what it quite looks like yet. Can you judge him completely right now? Absolutely not. Is he being judged fair in the public? No, probably not. He probably never will be, to be fair.
Yeah, right.
But can he be judged fairly by the Lions? I do think yes. I do think yes. I do think when Holmes said that, and Holmes, I thought, went a little far with, like, I think we've got great receivers. Like, I don't know if he needed to say that, like, necessarily. I get why he did, I guess, right? But, like, I think that the Lions, they know the situation. They know everything that's going on here. They have all the information, and they know,
sure,
just because they're not telling us, they know what his weak spots are, you know? So right, right. I think they can judge him, and I think they can make that determination. But yeah, for the average eye, you know, and us included, you know, in that conversation, it is harder because he's dealing with the same stuff that everybody else is. And I think that that's also, yeah, we do need to make sure we probably hammer that as well, because no one is immune to criticism here, of course, but, you know, everyone's dealing with the Lions rebuild in the same kind of way. And I think that should be noted as well.
And the Ravens, that wasn't necessarily a Jared Goff specific game plan from the Ravens. That's what they do.
Yeah,
they are going to bring the house after you.
Don't
and
care
if
who
you
want to
throw deep, go ahead and throw deep. And usually you don't have time for receivers to get 30 yards downfield, mm-hmm, because the pass rush is on you. So I think that we have to mention that too when we talk about Jared Goff's performance in that game and the just how, I guess, conservative it wound up looking. But I just overall, in general, as I've been saying since the start, I think there need to be at least one or two more moments in every game where, mm-hmm, Goff just says, all right, someone get us 40 yards.
Yeah,
and
right,
he takes a shot. Because if you're getting those one-on-one opportunities, whether it's a safety or a corner, you know, he's had some chances with Hockenson one-on-one that he hasn't taken. There aren't, I mean, the odds that those balls are going to get picked off are pretty low if you throw them where they're supposed to be thrown. Maybe you get it knocked down. Maybe you get a pass interference flag. Like, if you've got those chances, I think every once in a while you've got to take them. And like you said,
I agree,
you took a couple of them. I'd like to see two or three more per game, just because I think for this offense, it would make a huge difference to be able to pick up two or three chunk plays like that.
Loosen it up. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's my thing. I'd like to see a little bit more, because I think there are, like, again, their guys are not open. Guys are not running free.
No.
But you're getting them into some spots that should be favorable for you and not necessarily taking advantage of that. And so that's maybe the next step here, mm-hmm, is just to force those a little bit more. So,
yeah, I would agree with that.
How was I missed Matthew Stafford on the Manning cast.
Oh,
he
was
tune in until the second quarter.
He was classic Stafford. He was incredibly boring.
On the worst guest.
He was the worst guest of the day. He was followed by LeBron, who might have been the best guest. Who LeBron and Eli immediately started bashing LeBron's high school quarterback on the broadcast for reasons no one can figure out. But Stafford was boring. Yeah, didn't really say much. Now Peyton did forget he accidentally needled him about never winning a division, and Stafford handled that question in stride. But he's all smiles. I think that that, right?
Like, I'm gonna be loving it.
I think Allison Gonsnika, who's our editor here in Detroit, mentioned to us, like, he looks more relaxed. You can see in his face. And I thought that was true. Like, he does look much more. He looks better. How about that? And I think understandably so, right? It's been a long 12 years or whatever it was for Stafford here. So, I don't know. Good for him. I mean, he's playing really, really well. Like, I don't know how else, as well as I think we thought possible to this point. I don't know. He looks really good. Really,
right,
really
that's good. I don't want to turn this into a Stafford discussion, but that people seem surprised that he's playing this well. And those of us who have watched him here, like, well,
I told you, Stafford is either going to go 15-1 and win the NFL MVP, or he's going to go 9-0 and break his back. Like, one of the two.
Yeah.
One of the two. Hopefully for Stafford, he has a great year, because it looks like he's really enjoying it. So all things good there so far.
Well, the Lions will see him in a few weeks in LA. I'm sure that'll be a
fun one,
for Aaron Glenn. Chicago this weekend at their place, and Minnesota in 2 weeks. So, you know, a stretch here where the Lions, like we said, they can sort of figure out what this team's going to be made of. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chicago
is winnable. This is
pretty
winnable.
Ripe for the picking, it feels like. Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I don't.
How many sacks they give up last week? Like 12?
I mean, Myles Garrett had like 5 himself.
I mean,
they had 8 or 9.
You get a rookie quarterback here.
Maybe. I don't even know who's playing quarterback.
A bad offense, a bad coach, right? Yeah. Like,
yep.
I mean, all the things that the Bears used to get these freebies against Patricia. Okay, we'll see. Let's see if Campbell can do the same thing to Nagy.
We're over an hour here, so yeah. I'll bring it to an end. But I think that circle back to a point you made early on, I think one of the big tests so far, like this Bears matchup, you can look at now and say, well, maybe the Lions might have an advantage in the coaching staff.
Good.
And I think that was one of the things that you, like that, we talk about the Ravens being a measuring stick. You know, Campbell said it was sort of a test. You see how the team's going to respond against that level of competition, against that gritty a team that's going to bring it on every down. And I think they responded well. But that's also your coaching staff against one of the elite staffs in
the
NFL.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And you came out pretty well. And so I think that that's also something that we can be tracking here is just how these coaches are performing against the other staffs. And, you know, if it feels like they're getting teams are running circles around them, then that's a problem. It hasn't really felt like that yet.
Last thing I'm going to say, and I'll let you wrap this up, is I watched Campbell with the binoculars. And then my second thing with the binoculars was to find John Harbaugh, who, apart from looking shocked and his glasses had fallen off and is like, whatever. The first thing he did was run to Dan Campbell and give him a huge hug and tell him something for like 2 minutes. So all these coaches after these games are running over to him and telling him, like, keep up, keep doing whatever the hell it is you're doing. Right. And I think it's time for people in the league. And, you know, we wrote about this a couple weeks ago, and this is the last thing I'll say today, but it's time for people in the league to start paying attention. I think to Dan Campbell is a pretty good coach, because I think so far it's not, you know, they're 0-3, but the plan has been pretty good. And I think it's been hard to ignore.
All right, so we'll be back next Tuesday to see. Maybe we'll have a Lions win to talk about.
Maybe.
Still waiting for one. We didn't get one in the preseason either, so we're still waiting for one to discuss. But it should be interesting to see how they fare in Chicago. Like I said, we'll be back on Tuesday. Make sure you get over to theathletic.com. If you don't have a subscription, we're still running our 50% off deals for a few more weeks here, I think. So make sure you go check that out. Go back and read Nick's story. Sat down recently with Frank Ragnow and watched some film. It was super interesting. Ragnow is...
What a player.
Man, he's a great player and extremely smart and fun to be around. Mm-hmm, so I assume he's going to be here for a while. So make sure you go check that out. We obviously had our coverage coming out of the Ravens game too, and we'll have some stuff here running into Chicago. So head over to theathletic.com. for those stories. You can get the ad-free version of the podcast on the app as well. Otherwise, find us at Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, all those other spots. So for Nick, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.